This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Sauce after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Welcome back into the Morning Rush. I love Matt Zimmerman. Just in that call. Yes.
I know it.
Yes. You hear that little clap that he gives? I mean, he's all of us. He's all of us on the radio broadcast.
Bigger optimist. Bigger, real quick. Bigger homer, bigger optimist, bigger Arkansas rose-colored glasses. Him or Schaefer?
Oh. That is a tough one.
Mm.
I think Z has more passion.
Yes.
But Rick, I don't think there's ever been anything negative said ever about anything that's been Arkansas related there. Yeah. I don't know. We should have that face off.
I want to ask Chuck that sometime.
Yeah, because he's done the games with them both.
Got to find the proper snarky, sarcastic way to phrase that question. You know?
Yeah. Ooh, man. Yeah, that's
of
that's
all
a tough
the broadcast
one.
Partners you've had.
Yeah,
and particularly these two.
Yeah, because he's done games with Z, Scotty Thurman.
Yeah. There's no question. The only two you'd ask about is, you know, Quinn Grovey.
Quinn Grovey, yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. I need to ask Phil Elson that too, because he did a games with Rick Schaefer as well.
Yeah,
and
Zimmerman.
And Zimmerman, yeah. So that'd be great. So yeah, we may need to have that happen. We may need to be talking about that. But here's the thing: we do have to talk about here in this segment. Let's get the elephant out of the room, okay? Or the elephant in the room, whatever the saying is. I don't care, but you know what I'm saying.
The elephant in the room is the final play of the game last night.
Correct. Well, yes. That's more specifically. I was just going to be general and say officiating, but yes. That particular play.
Well, I mean, that's now, the one that everyone's focused on.
Right.
Is the final play, Desi Seals with the shot right in front of the Arkansas bench. And was it a foul or not?
Yeah.
That's what everybody last night was after me on Twitter about.
Because, just to be honest, that's not the particular play I'm questioning and upset about.
Okay.
But I understand where Razorback fans are, so we'll cover that one. Now, you put out, and you saw these replays, and you put out screen grabs and all of that.
Yep.
That at the end of the game, when Joe put up his shot, got blocked, as he stills put up his shot, didn't go obviously in, people wanted a foul there.
They wanted a foul.
But you said that there was no foul on either of those shots whatsoever. Do not make those calls. Why?
When you look at, first of all, the shot with Isaiah Joe was cleanly blocked. There's nothing there to call. You agree? Do you think there was a foul? I mean, that was ball out of hand, block shot. You're very fortunate Seals even got a chance to put his hands on the ball again.
I felt like between the final two shots, Seals was the one that I would feel like would be more apt to have a foul.
Let's talk about that because I think we can. I think if we are objective, and listen, we're not objective. I want Arkansas to win just as much as you out there want Arkansas to win. I'm just trying to help you understand why these aren't fouls. And here's why it's important. I want to get to why that's important. Because Arkansas has a very good defensive team. And by the next game when they play Ole Miss, the tables could be turned. But this was good defense on these plays. And you look and there's a lot of contact. And you also got to look at the clock and when maybe some of this contact occurs. But you look, and I got a screen grab from the actual replay with, you know, DV Sport does the replay, and I've retweeted that this morning. So a replay, a screen grab from replay from conference officials this morning, and with point one, ball still in hand with Desi Seals, and you can find this on my Twitter, at Tommy Craft ESPN. The defenders are in what's called legal guarding position.
Yeah.
In my judgment, and I think in the judgment of the covering official, Desi Seals jumps into the defender. And one thing that is a directive this year and has been for the last few seasons, you do not penalize offensive initiated contact. In my opinion, in that play, Desi Seals jumped into the defender to try to create a foul and to try to create a whistle as much as the defender created any contact. You also have to consider when time expires and all that. There's a lot going on in that play. But there's another shy young, because, of course, when I threw the, pulled the pin and threw the grenade that I didn't think was a foul and then went to bed, you know, woke up to about five.
You got ratioed the crap out of you on Twitter.
What's that mean?
Ratioed means if you put out a tweet that gets much more replies than they do likes.
Yeah.
That means your ratio. That means everyone's mad at you and your tweet is terrible. Well, they were, your opinion's terrible. That's what it means.
They were mad at me last night.
Yes, they were.
But I didn't care because I went to bed. But then there was another one. I just, in response to someone named Leslie, I just put this one out of one off the TV that someone screen grabbed off their TV that clearly shows, you go find it, clearly shows the defender in straight up in legal guarding position, vertical, and Seals on his tiptoes moving forward into the defender. Now, why is this important to understand? Because Arkansas is a hell of a defensive team. And there are going to be many occasions where the tables turn. And Arkansas is defending a final shot. And Arkansas is the team, what was it, up two at that point. And you don't want that whistle against you. If this would have been on the other end of the floor and the tables turned, everybody, well, that's a hell of a job right there. That's a great no call. I mean, I understand where we're at. We're looking at it through our fandom here. And I'm with you. I wanted Arkansas to win as bad as any of you guys did out there last night. I'm just trying to help understand why this was not a foul.
Mm-hmm.
Sills was up against a legal defender. Now, I know there was contact after that, but Sills was as responsible for the contact as the defender.
Mm.
How can you punish or call a foul on a defender when it's created by the offensive player?
Mm.
That's my question.
Yeah, and listen, I'm going to refer to you on this because obviously you know the rules a little more than I do.
Right.
But to me, that wasn't even the issue that I have with officials. And again, I want to make clear, I am not.
And I'm talking specifically about Sills in the last play.
The last play.
The defender's legal. The contacts created by the offensive player in Seals jumping into and creating the contact, how do you penalize the defender there?
Yeah. I understand that. And again, I am not saying in any regard that the reason Arkansas lost this game is because the officiating. I'm not. We all know how they lost this game. Offensive rebounds and second chance points by LSU. That's how they lost this game. My only problem, and I'm not going to just point to one specific play necessarily, but my only problem is it felt like during the game that what was a foul on Arkansas on the side where LSU was on having their offensive possession was not necessarily always called a foul when Arkansas had it seemed inconsistent.
Okay, be a little more specific because that's very general.
Well, for instance,
give me something more specific than you don't think it was called on both ends.
The Mason Jones continuation foul play. I thought that was an extremely weak call. And I had seen calls, or at least I saw plays that you had similar contact where LSU drove it in, or when Arkansas drove it in, that did not get the same foul call. That particular play to me was the one I took issue with, the one that fouled Mason Jones out of the game.
Right. With a minute and a half to go.
Which was big. I mean, it was a big deal. And it ended up getting the and one. Not only did I not think it was a foul, I didn't think he was. I didn't think it should have been a shooting foul, or at least not an and one situation. I thought it was on the floor.
All right.
So that's the call. If any of the calls that we're going to be upset about, that was the one I took the most issue with.
All right.
Now, again, the final two plays, the final two shots, I saw it and I was like, nah, probably not. Because late in the game, I mean, if it was the other way around, as you said, they're not going to call a foul on LSU on Arkansas.
And everybody thinks, well, everybody thinks the home team hires the referees or something. Well, that's officiating and you get on the road. Well,
that was the case. You do all the Arkansas games.
Exactly. Must would have hired me a long time ago.
Yeah.
Be undefeated at home.
Wouldn't be here.
Yeah, exactly. That's just not how it works. I mean, I know that might be how it works in your high school conference somewhere that you're listening, but that's not how it works in the Southeastern Conference. And these guys are making the veteran officials in that league are making in the mid 3000s to work a game. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're graded on every call and no call. And if you're not grading out high enough, you don't get to work next year. It's that simple. You either get them right and you keep your job. If you get them wrong too much, you don't keep your job.
Yeah.
And the research shows when all these fouls are graded out and all these calls and no calls and are graded out and you think there's no accountability. So if you're not in the upper 90% range, you know, eventually you're not going to get to do these things anymore. And you're not going to get to make $3,500 a night to referee a basketball game. They're not out there. They don't care. The officials just want to get it right. And I know that's hard for any of us to understand because we want our team to win, and I'm right there with you. But that's just not how it works.
But, again, Tommy, in a game this close, on the road, when it's conference play, everyone needs everything to be perfect.
I understand. And, you know, you're talking about, and I want to go back and maybe we can pull it up during the break, the video, and look at Mason Jones' play again. I'll say this. It happened with a minute and a half to go in the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big push, and I hope we can all come to an agreement on this. What happens in the last 4 minutes of a game is far more important than what happens in the first four or the first half or the first four of the second half, because there's a lot of possessions and a lot of opportunities to overcome a mistake by a player, a coach, a referee, or a timing error or anything else that could possibly occur with 14-12 left to go in the first half. Something happens. And it cost a team a point or a possession or whatever. And it doesn't get fixed properly in the proper manner, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's 2 seconds come off the clock and they don't fix it. You know, we're talking about, we'll come back, let me give you an example. The shot clock violation with 1:03 to go in the game.
That's another one I took issue with, yeah.
Okay, why did you take issue with that?
Because what it looked like to me is, I'm not in the heads of the referees. It looked like to me that the officials did not know that there were only 8 seconds on the shot clock. They thought it was a full, and so they weren't even paying attention to it. That's what it looked like to me.
No, but why did they go to the monitor and get it all right? Why are the rules set up where they can do some things late in the game? Because at the end of the game, the number of possessions left by either team is so limited, you got to fix those mistakes. Mm-hmm. Or any timing errors or anything going on. You got to be perfect in the last 4 minutes.
Yes, you do.
Because you don't have time to overcome anything that occurs that's outside of, you know, a team error.
Yeah.
Team errors are on them. So if you have a timing issue, an officiating issue, anything that you can fix, that's why the rules are set up last 2 minutes of regulation and overtime. You got more liberty with replay.
Mm-hmm.
And that instance with the shot clock last night and getting the timing right and the adjustment to go back to 1:02, that's why that's important. That second last night, as we saw with the final shot coming at the horn, that second could have been crucial.
Yep, could have been. And I just, they got the call right.
Right.
When they reviewed it.
Your question to me on Twitter was, well, why did you wait so long to blow your whistle? What is an air ball? It's not a violation until it misses everything and comes down and you got an end result to the play.
Yeah. It was just one of those things. And in those calls, because it could have an impact to where you don't have the stop engine play. You could have somebody not getting back on defense if it would have continued on in gameplay.
The shot was away in time. It didn't hit the ring.
I don't know what the referees were thinking. Sure. It just looked like to me that the officials did not know how many seconds were left on that shot clock because inbounded with only 8 seconds left.
The problem was the game clock needed to be corrected. It wasn't the shot clock when the issue is the game clock. And that's my point. That's why replay is expanded in the final minutes, the final 2 minutes of regulation and overtime, final 2 minutes, because, and that's the point of time, what happens at the end of the game and getting those right, and everybody wants, well, if it's a foul in the first minute, it's a foul in the last minute. Well, that sounds all nice and warm and fuzzy, but really what happens at the end of the game, you want to be perfect. And it's really important for the players and the coaches and everybody, the announcers. The calls that Chuck makes at the end of the game are far more important for a game-winning shot than the call he's going to make at 18-12 left in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
That's just true.
And the free throws that are getting made with 2 seconds left to go are going to be more important than the ones in the first half.
They may count the same.
Yep. No, I agree with you.
But they have far more bearing. And that's just the reality of it.
No, I agree with you on that. I tell you what, let's get the real perspective here. Let's get down to brass tacks. And let's go to the phone lines and welcome in Miss Lisa, who is not happy. Good morning, Miss Lisa.
Well, I probably shouldn't even be on the air.
No, we love it.
Well, here's the deal. First of all, they knocked my little Desi on his back. That play went over in my mind during the night a million times. My little Desi that I love. Okay,
you're talking about the finals. You're referencing the last shot of the game.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I don't like him being knocked on his back.
Okay.
Period.
All right.
All right. Number two, Mason Jones, the last foul. I agree with John. That was a bunch of BS. And number three, Reggie Chaney made me so mad that if I could have reached, or as we say it, light, wretched through my TV and grabbed a hold of his neck, I'd have choked his guts out. Ooh. He may, listen, we was up all, what, 10, 9, 10, 11 points. Then we go to halftime, and I believe, if I remember correctly, we're up 3. I mean, I would have got in there, and I would have choked him. I don't even know if he would have come back out and sat on the court with the team. He would have had to apologize to them. That was stupid.
Yeah.
Now, Reggie's got to learn in these games on the road in the SEC to keep his cool. Mm-hmm. I like Reggie Chaney, and I think he can be a good player, but he's something. I don't even know why he got so mad last night. But I know what, he got me cranked up.
Well, Miss Lisa, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tommy, that play in technical, that left to a 5-point play, right? Because he got the and one, two technical fouls, and then the technical free throws. I mean, it's a 5-point play right there. That's huge.
Yeah.
And not only that, it was 5 points, but the momentum totally worse than the 5 points was the momentum.
It changed, it changed the moods of both locker rooms at halftime. It injected confidence for LSU, and I would imagine it made the halftime chat with Musselman a little less than pleasant with his team.
He didn't come back into the game.
Because of one guy, I would imagine, I mean, I don't know, we're making assumptions because none of us were in there, but I can just imagine he went in there with a little more disdain in his voice because of that, because it happened with 21 seconds to go before halftime. I imagine he went off about
it. You can't do that. Yeah. You can't do that. And the height discrepancy was so, you know, I could see that. And I'm just, like I say, a woman sitting out here in the middle of a rice paddy. I could see all that. And we can help that next year. It should not be as much of a problem for us. But right now it is. But I will say this about this team. I'll try to end it on a positive note as best I can. I want to just open my doors out here and scream my guts out is what I want to do. But they play hard. They play with heart. And I love our coach. And but dang, I want to say something else. But dang, when we get them to Fayetteville, I want to be there hanging from the scoreboard, and I expect to beat them. I don't expect to play close. I mean, you don't come in to Bud Walton and beat us after what happened down there. You don't let it happen. And Reggie Chaney may have to hang up there with me. I don't know. But don't knock Desi on his back. Now, I'll be at that game. And, Tommy, I know you're official and all that, and I respect you for that. I'm still upset about the Scotty Thurman thing around here with my family and so forth. I'm not over that yet, and then this happened. But I'm going to tell the officials, I may get thrown out of there. Don't let them throw Desi on his back. And I'm friends with Desi on Facebook, and I can't say no more because I'll get him in trouble and me in trouble, and then see, I don't know what'll happen. But anyway, don't throw Desi on his back. And if they want to throw me out for that, throw me out. I just cannot stand to see him thrown on his back. But that last foul on Mason Jones, and I'll give LSU credit. They had a great game plan for Isaiah Joe. Let's give credit where credit is due. And someone on your message board said that. And they did. They had a great plan for Isaiah. And he just couldn't hardly break loose from them. But, you know, that was bull. That last call on Mason Jones was bull.
I agree, Miss Lisa.
Tommy, what do you say?
Yeah, Tommy.
I want to look at it one more time. But
No, nothing.
Yeah.
I don't have to look at it
I've looked at the first time. I've looked at the Desi Seals play so many times since then. That happened with a minute and a half to go. I don't. I'm gonna be honest. I need to look at it again because I don't remember.
I remember, and it was bull.
That final second of the game, I've looked at 1,000 times since last night.
Well, I can tell you, don't look at it 1,001. It was bull.
Which one?
So, the last one and the one on Mason Jones. They were both bull.
Yeah.
Now, Cheney slapping the ball like a 5-year-old, that was bull, too. I hate to go back to one thing losing the game, but, guys, I just, that lost. And I even sat here in my chair and I thought, that's going to cost us this game. I mean, I said that to myself. I thought, and my husband, of course, he done went to bed. And he said, quit screaming in there. I can't sleep. But anyway, anyway, I'm going to get off here before I say something that'll get y'all rolled off the radio.
Yeah, let's do that.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Miss Lisa. And if I was going to suggest that if you were going to go to the game and you wanted to yell at the officials, I was going to give her my little plastic megaphone that I used to use in the student section, but for some reason, I don't feel like she needs it.
She doesn't need a megaphone.
No, she does not. In fact,
got a built-in one.
I'm sure that when she comes to that next Razorback game at Bud Walton, we'll know where Miss Lisa is sitting immediately. Let's go back to the phone lines. Joe is in Fayetteville. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, guys. What game last night? Miss Lisa's a little fired up still. Whenever I look at that game, I don't so much think about people missing calls, the officials missing calls. I see people all over Facebook chattering about missed call, missed this, missed that. I think the game was just some growing pains for our team because there's a lot of the little things that we missed out on that you just, the older you get, the more you do it.
The more you do what?
Yeah, can you... Be a little more like the offensive rebounds in the second chance point.
Yes.
Be a little more specific,
well,
you know.
Okay. The second chance points, are you talking about the ones we didn't get or the ones LSU did get?
Well, I just know that Arkansas got outperformed on the offensive glass 23-3, which led to 26 second chance points by LSU and nothing for Arkansas on putbacks.
I don't know what it was, but the way they got back on defense every time, I feel like the game plan was to get back on defense and not go for the second chance. I don't know, because it just looked like that was set in stone, that you're supposed to leave and not go for second chance points. Another thing is, you know, LSU in the second half basically ran the same play over and over and over and over. And we had one charge while they were going to the bucket every time. I think there was one charge we had there at the end of the half. Is that correct?
I'd have to double check, but that sounds correct. I'm going to go ahead and assume you're right.
Yeah, I think so. But when you're running that pick and roll or the guy at the top of the arch or just going straight down to the bucket, the older you get, and once they look at that game, they're going to think, man, if we couldn't get a rebound and they're going down there every time, we've got to draw the charge there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're up against it, Joe. Appreciate your phone call, but we can continue to talk about that, man, on the other side of the break. You know, that's the thing is that when people watch this game and you can look at it from the hindsight and just say, okay, well, if this play changes, this play changes, if this thing happened, if that thing happened, you know, it makes all the difference in the world. You can really dissect the game that way. But again, at the end of the day,
if Adriel Bailey was 6'11", it would be a whole lot different.
Yeah, if Connor Vanover was deemed eligible, it would have been different. I mean, yes, you could play that game all day long, but the fact of the matter is that Arkansas lost the game last night, and the reason they lost is because they got out-rebounded big time on the offensive boards, and they gave up 26 second chance points. It's as simple as that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Welcome back. back into the Morning Rush. We are brought to you by Joe's Grill and Cantina.
Hey, if you're looking for a place to watch the game on Saturday, what time do they play Ole Miss on Saturday? 5 o'clock. Perfect. Head over to Joe's Grill and Cantina. Watch the Hogs, half-price apps and taps. TVs all around the restaurant. I bet Matty T will be over there. He goes to Joe's all the time to watch
That's
the game.
That's my spot.
That is your spot. Half-price appetizers, brisket nachos, Mexican pizza, the big sampler platter. You can munch on some chips, have you some cold beers that are half-price as well. It's all during the game Saturday at Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street. Across from Harps.
Is it the brisket nachos you get on the half-price apps and taps?
I did get the brisket nachos, but my girlfriend got the Mexican pizza, which means I ate half of the Mexican pizza. But
And all the brisket nachos.
Yeah. But what's great, though, is that you can take some of it home to go, and it reheats perfectly in that air fryer.
Oh, that air fryer you got.
It's layered deep, you know, all the jalapenos in there, too.
Okay, you got to stop, because I'm going to sit here, and I hate it when we talk about food, but I love it when we talk about food, because I end up getting
It's a good atmosphere hungry. For the games, too, and it's not some place you can't bring your family to, you know, so it's a good place to watch the games, but you could also be there with your family. Mm-hmm.
And the chips and salsa.
Yes, and the chips and
salsa. That's how we talked about, Tom. That's how you judge a good Mexican restaurant. Yep. Yeah. A good Mexican restaurant is solely based on the chips and salsa and nothing else. So if they got good ones, which Joe has amazing, head over there for the game coming up this Saturday. We've been really diving into and discussing Arkansas's loss last night to LSU on the road in Baton Rouge in a tight one. And before we go back to the phone lines, though, I do want to play this clip from Eric Musselman after the game, which obviously he's not happy because he's a competitor. He doesn't want to lose, no matter how it's done, no matter who it's to. Nope. He doesn't want to lose, so he wasn't happy with it. But what he was happy with was his team's effort.
I don't think there's any team in America that plays any harder than we do. You know, they made a run at the last 4 minutes of the first half. They made a run to start the second half, and we just, you know, we don't go away. You know, there's a lot of teams that are up and down. They lose by 16. They lose by 18. They don't come to play in non. I mean, we played hard. We just lost. And so you tip your hat off to LSU. They kicked our butts on the backboards, and the free throws attempted. That's the game. And so we got to get ready for Ole Miss. There's nothing else we can do. But as far as effort, I'll go with these guys any night. Into an arena and go play because they're giving us all they got for sure.
So hearing that from Eric Musselman, you know, again, no one likes to lose. But when you hear that from a coach who demands effort, like you can tell on the sidelines, the guy is passionate. He's energetic. You can tell also from his practices. Have you ever been able to watch some of the scrimmages and whatnot? He demands effort and he will get on you if you don't give effort, and he will also send you to the bench, and you won't play if you don't give effort.
That's the biggest motivator a coach has, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Playing time.
And one of the first things when they put out these cool videos on the Razorback Twitter account, I remember he's sitting there in the practice, and one of the things, and the way he said it was very interesting, because it's one thing to say, I expect you to give effort, but he said it in the way of, I want it to be where no matter who is in this arena, this Bud Walton arena, whether it's when it's the guy up at the top row in the back corner, I don't want him questioning our effort. I don't even want to have them give the reason or give them an excuse to question our effort. And however he's translating that, which I think it's also a great sign to what Mike Anderson, the type of players that he recruited, because Mike Anderson was the same similar way. But the translation that these guys have had where, again, two things are never going to happen this season. Two things are never going to happen. You are never going to see this Razorback basketball team not get effort, and you are never going to see a team and a coaching staff more prepared than what Eric Musselman. Those two things right there are going to win you games that you probably shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to win every game, because you still have to have Jimmys and Joes. You still have to have players. Still got to have talent. And you still got to play well. I mean, let's just be honest. You got to execute. But if you're telling me that right now, and I don't see this changing under Eric Musselman's watch, that right now, if they have a coach and a team that will never get out-hustled and never get out-coached or at least out-prepared, I mean, what else do you even need? That this is where the excitement comes into play. Again, we have said this many times, that as long as they buy into Eric Musselman and they give full effort, they are going to be competitive in these games.
Yep.
But they got to execute. They got to still do their thing. Mm-hmm. But to me, this is just another great indication of the fantastic coaching, preparation, and buy-in that Eric Musselman has created with this basketball culture.
Defense and rebounding are all about effort. You know, and rebounding is about size and ability sometimes, too. And we talk about matchups, and Eric Musselman talks about matchups, and we kind of change the narrative a little bit and turn the tables on that conversation a little bit about a week ago when Musselman said, well, they got to match up with our four guards. Well, last night we saw what happened when you can't match up with their three bigs. And it's just, the second chance points were just
that's what it was.
Too overwhelming.
That's what it was.
In the end.
That's all it was.
And somehow Arkansas still had the ball and a chance at the end of the game.
Yeah. And not only that, but they had made plays at the end. It wasn't like they had this big lead and then LSU came back late and then Arkansas just choked it away. Yeah. Like, we're not talking about them having a 10-point lead with 3 minutes to go. We're talking about they were forced to have to make plays on the other end, and they were making the plays offensively. It was the defense that they were unable to execute and get stops there.
And then Arkansas didn't even get the last shot off in time. I mean, here's the other thing that, I was noticing in this picture and was pointing out. If Sills, the picture I tweeted out, if Sills even gets that shot off, it's no good.
Tommy, stop. You're not supposed to do that.
Oh, okay.
You're supposed to say that.
He got fouled. He got hammered.
There you go.
His arm got severed off.
You should know this by now. You should know.
I'm just saying.
I know.
Arkansas shouldn't have even been in a situation to have a chance to win the game at the end. And somehow, because Musselman is a great coach and he takes a roster that's undersized, understaffed, he finds a way to get it done. I'm just really impressed. I'm impressed with this 2-point loss last night because they played their butts off.
Yeah, they did.
Because they played with effort. And if they hadn't lost their minds with 3 minutes, 4 minutes to go in the first half, who knows what happens? Somehow there was about a 6-minute stretch in this game from about 3 or 4 minutes to go in the first half to about the first 3 or 4 minutes of the second half that just were like the lost minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The lost chronicles of the Arkansas-LSU game.
Mm-hmm.
If Arkansas stays the course there and they don't have some sloppy plays, the technical foul by Chaney, and life gets breathed back into the LSU bench, they go in the locker room probably with a lot of self-doubt.
Yep.
All of that occurred that evaporated that 11-point lead, removed the self-doubt that LSU was starting to have. The beginning of the breaking of their will had begun at the end of the first half. All of that dissipated when Arkansas let that lead go away. And then how long did it take him to get the lead in the second half? Like no time at all?
Yeah.
Pretty
much the start of the first half.
Arkansas was on the ropes early in the second half.
Mm-hmm. But they fought back. And that's
because
what it comes down to.
That's what this coach demands.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm proud of the way this team played.
Yeah, and I think Eric Musselman is too, as you heard in that clip. Let's go back to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Robert is in Quitman. What's going on, Robert?
All right. Good morning, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm going to make a comment, and I'm going to hang up and listen and let you guys tell me if I'm right or wrong. But on the Chaney thing, with him disciplining him the second half by not playing him, I think that hurt the short rotation we have anyway. I think he could have did his discipline like after the game, the next practice. Do you think that hurt us down the stretch? With one less man rotation.
I mean, I think so. Listen, because if late in the game, especially, and appreciate the phone call. Late in the game, you got to your Arkansas is not talented enough to have anyone missing from the rotation, or even to have with Reggie Chaney in this case, like he's got size, and I'm not talking about good size. He's just got size compared to the rest of the Razorback team.
Right.
And it's got so to a point to where they put in Ethan Henderson.
Yep.
And he didn't do anything.
2 minutes in the game.
Yeah. He didn't do anything, but they had to put him in to try to figure something out. And not having Reggie Chaney, I understand, I understand Eric Musselman sitting him on the bench and punishing him, but I don't think that putting Reggie Chaney back in makes a difference in this game.
Played 7 minutes last night.
Yeah, but it was because he didn't play another minute after that technical. And I believe, Tommy, you have the stat. Is it because he also had four fouls with the foul and the technical, right?
Hang on. He had no shot attempts in the game. He had no rebounds in the game. His only stat is 4 fouls and 1 assist. That's a stat line from last night in 7 minutes.
That's not successful.
So, I mean, if you want the guy to play more, I guess get after it. But he had 4 fouls and assist and nothing else. So it's not like, okay, he's not in there to shoot. He's in there to rebound. Well, okay. I'm not finding those either. So I think we're seeing, there's clearly, I don't know if it's an issue off the floor that's keeping him from playing more, or just we're seeing it right there. He got 7 minutes. Didn't get a shot up or a rebound in the game. That's why he's not playing more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the technical foul, and he gets that foul, that third foul, and then his technical foul became his fourth. I don't know if that action is a problem, that there's more of that behind the scenes, and that's why he's not trusted more with more minutes. I don't know. But clearly there's a reason he's not getting more minutes this year.
Yeah.
Did we see a glimpse of that last night? I think we did.
Mm.
I think that was a clue.
Well, and let's be honest too, Tommy. You know, Mason Jones has gotten technicals this year. But did he sit on the bench for the rest of the game? No.
I don't think it's Musselman style that just because you get a technical foul, you're on the bench.
Right, that's my point.
I don't think it's an automatic, like, team rule.
No, that's my point, that there was more than just that technical foul.
But what Chaney did was just stupid.
It was dumb. Yeah,
it was fouled the ball. I mean, it wasn't planned out. It wasn't thought out.
Just like volleyballed it into the stands. Well, I mean, like, what are you doing?
Because the ball was just there, and he was frustrated.
Oh, I know.
And it was just
still,
there.
You can't do that, though.
But you can't do that. You got to be more restrained. I mean, and that's just, it's just not, it's not being responsible to your teammates.
So you would have called a technical on that.
I'm just asking. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because, you know, some of those things are subjective.
No. You can't do that.
Okay. No, and I agree. When he did, I was not complaining about the technical foul at all. I mean, he had to be called for that.
But
that, again, comes back to the whole problem of this team, as entertaining as they are and as, in a way, overachieving and that they are right now. They can't afford to have plays like that. They can't afford to have players on the bench that play roles, because that's the thing about Reggie Chaney. He's not setting the world on fire, but we've seen games where he's gone out and had 8.6 rebounds on, you know, 15 minutes. He's still a guy that plays. You got to have the guys that can play in the game. He doesn't have to start. He doesn't have to go out and get 20 and 10. He just needs to come in and do his work in that short span that he's in and then come back out. It's the only thing you need from him. But when he cuts 4 fouls, has a technical, gets a 5-point possession to LSU, especially there when things are getting bad for Arkansas because they're going on a little run, you just can't have those plays. Yeah. So I'm sure he'll learn from it. I'm sure it'll be addressed. But, you know, there's a reason why Eric Musselman did what he did and not have him play the rest of the game. And I don't think it was because of the technical. I think it had a lot more to do with the fact that he got 4 fouls and he was not playing very well.
But I don't think LSU is a team that, well, they're better than Arkansas.
No.
It's just, well, LSU is just a team that, you know, you're just going to have trouble against. When they play against Arkansas again on March the 4th, that's a game, you can forget about that one. Or if you play them in the SEC tournament, you know, game or two in. I don't think this team's any better than Arkansas. They were better than Arkansas last night, but barely. Mm-hmm. Arkansas actually led more of this game than LSU led.
Yeah.
They just led at the right moment.
But Tommy, you know what this means? That after this game last night, Arkansas no longer has led every game at the end of regulation.
No, they lost their first game
in regulation.
In regulation.
Regulation, as the stats would say.
Yeah.
But Brian from Spyro texted in. He says, I don't agree with the second chance points being the issue that hurt us the most. I believe the 10-plus possessions, scoring no points, and the lack of production from the rest of the shooters is what did us in, because we had enough possessions with the ball to overcome second-chance points. We just missed too many shots and too many opportunities.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can agree with you a little bit there, Brian, but the problem is that Arkansas still shot the ball fairly well. I mean, they shot 45% from the field. They made 17 of 18 from their free throws. So it wasn't like they just had one of those nights where they couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat.
Right.
I mean, they did enough. You got 24 out of Mason Jones. You got 22 points out of Jimmy Witt. 13 out of Isaiah Joe. I know it's lower than what he's used to, but Desi Stills added 8. Adriel Bailey hit a 3 for crying out loud. He had 8 points. But when you go down and you start looking at the bench, Jalen Harris plays 20 minutes, gives you 2 points, 2 steals, 2 assists. I mean, that's about what you expect out of him. Took 5 shots, but Chaney and Henderson added nothing to it as far as offensively goes. Yeah, it comes down to Arkansas scored enough points to win. Because, listen, they're only giving up, what is it, 58 points a game averaging? And they scored 77. That's mm-hmm. enough to win.
Yeah.
It's those second chance points, man, that killed you. It's the offensive rebounds that killed you.
26-0. Zero.
I mean, it's right there.
Yeah.
That's the reason.
You got to fix that in recruiting. Hey, are you tired of your noisy neighbors? Looking to upgrade your apartment? If you're looking for a new duplex or townhome to live in, you need to call our friends at Trinity Multifamily. Whether it's Northwest Arkansas, the River Valley, Hot Springs, Central Arkansas, or anywhere, Trinity Multifamily can help you find a new place to call home. 479-452-1817 or search online using their easy search tool at TrinityMultifamily.com. Trinity Multifamily is your teammate in the real estate game.
If you want to get on the conversation, call or text into the Morning Rush at 877-377-6963. This Ole Miss game coming up this Saturday is going to be a pivotal one. And I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that I know all the leaps and bounds what Ole Miss is all about, and I've watched him a bunch of times. I'm sure we'll be able to study up a little bit. But, you know, that game's going to be crucial, too, because it's again, Arkansas's not going to get blown out in games. It's about who can make the more plays at the end of the game. And if Arkansas can go into Oxford and play offensively as well as they did in this game, they'll win the game. But they got to work. I'm sure the rebounding or lack thereof is going to be an emphasis on practice this week. Because I also had somebody, and this is what frustrates me. I had somebody also get, you know, emotions get high, tensions get high in a game like this, but tweet at me saying that there is zero excuse for the rebounding being as bad as it was last night. Now, I will agree to an extent. However,
there may not be excuses, but there's reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. However, if you're a team as undersized as Arkansas, your tallest guy, because Reggie Chaney, I think, actually by height is your tallest guy. He or Ethan Henderson. You know how tall they are? In the guide, they're listed at 6'8". You know what they probably are in reality? Probably about 6'7".
Oh, they don't lie in media guides.
Yeah,
John,
they never do that. You know who's playing post, who's done a really good job at rim protecting? Adriel Bailey. Folks, he is 6'6 on a good day. There's the reasons why you're getting out. Everyone's like, it's just about effort. Really? If that's the case, Tommy, if you put in more effort than Anthony Davis out there on the NBA court, you should be able to get every rebound, right? Mm-hmm. As long as it's just about effort, that's it.
Yeah. Ethan Henderson listed at 6'8".
He's 6'7".
So, yeah.
Those things say, you got to take off at least an inch.
In your shoes, standing on an old school phone book.
Yeah.
And Reggie Chaney listed at 6'8".
Yeah, 6'7". At best. I mean, that's the reality, folks, because they do that in every media guide. So my point is, though, is that, yes, effort plays a part in it. Yes, Arkansas getting out-rebounded the way they did last night cannot happen. But it's not like this is the days where they had Stephen Hill, Darian Towns, and Charles Thomas, and they got out-rebounded this bad. I mean, and it's, again, you heard it from Eric Musselman just now when he was talking about effort. He says he would take this team and their effort over anybody else in the country. And I think he would know. So it's not about effort. It's not about them putting in the work. It's about them having to overcome them not being as big as what they want to be right now. Get rebounds.
Hmm.
What's home? What's home? What's this?
Jamario Bell actually listed at 6'5 in both media guides.
Yeah.
The notes, he's at 6'5 in the football media guide, 6'5.
So he's probably 6'4. Football does the same thing.
I'm just saying, we've seen this before where Matt Jones was two different heights once, you know, where we've seen players.
Yeah, what was his
at height? One height in football and one height in basketball. That's what I quickly looked up. I grabbed the football media guy because I thought, Bell might be one height in one book and a little bit taller in basketball. But no, actually, same height. So
interesting. Yeah, because
we have seen that before.
Well, same thing with like Ryan Mao, and I remember people saying he's almost 6'7".
Yeah,
well, he's about 6'5". But yeah. Still, the point is, though, is that when you're going to be going up against conference foes this year,
yep.
Unfortunately, these games are going to happen.
Yeah,
you just got to limit it as much as you can.
We've talked about matchup problems with bigs. There was 3 forwards in the starting lineup last night. and you just had, you know, Darius Days and Trendon Watford were just too much.
Yeah.
Had 16 and 21 points. But more importantly, 16 and 9 rebounds.
Blech.
Darius Days had 16 boards and 16 points.
He won't do that again this year. Guarantee it. Blood bank guarantee. By the way, Dave in Clarksville has a question for Tommy.
All right.
He says, was this the and one in the last minute of the LSU guard a continuation? It seemed like the foul happened before the two steps to score. He says in the last minute on LSU, so I'm assuming he means Mason Jones.
Are you talking about the Mason Jones play?
I don't know.
We're talking about the Mason.
There's a lot of and ones.
There was three and one plays. The Mason Jones play, looked at that again. Definitely a foul. If you want to question whether it's an and one or not on the floor, because the foul occurred at the free throw line, at the intersection of the free throw line and the lane line there, free throw line extended where the lane line comes up. Definitely a foul. I don't think anyone would argue that's a foul. You hate that to be your fifth foul, but that's a body bumping foul. If you want to say that should have been on the floor and a one and one versus an and one, I'm not going to argue with you on that.
That was my problem too.
If you want to say that's continuation NBA, I'm not going to. It's close. It's 50-50 maybe. They flushed it.
Yeah. By the way, Grant Cook just texted into me and says that Mallett was legit 6'7". You know what, Grant? you don't come in here with your facts.
Someone's arguing with you and not me for a minute.
Well, you know what? If people are arguing with me about how tall somebody is, then I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. But let me ask you, Grant, did you get a measuring tape? Did you go over there and measure him yourself? Or are you just going off the media guide?
That'd be kind of weird.
That would be a little weird. I really hope you didn't do that. But if Mallett was a legitimate 6'7", I'll believe you.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
It is a recruiting Thursday, so to help talk more about recruiting, let's welcome in the man Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Richard. How you doing?
Top of the morning, guys.
Well, we have a lot of things we want to get into. But first off, I want to ask you about this basketball game last night and kind of turn it into recruiting. As I see what Eric Musselman has done in this year, and obviously it was a tough loss last night, but the fact that Arkansas was even in the game was incredible. But I'm just getting this vibe, man, that once Eric Musselman is able to get these talented guys in this 2020 class in, and I'm not totally sure what the 2021 class is going to look like, but if he can just put together a couple of recruiting classes, I think his coaching ability and his strategies are good enough to make Arkansas to really put him in a stratosphere they haven't been in quite some time. Do you get that vibe too, that once he gets more of these players in, it's really going to be a huge change?
Yeah, I mean, you look at this team, and they're a bunch of good players, but there's really not any. I mean, Mason Jones and obviously he's having a great season. Isaiah Joe, one of the best shooters in the country, but there's not a superstar. There's not a great amount of talent to where you just go, wow. And sometimes you scratch your head and you wonder how do they do what they're doing? You know, I mean, I know last night they lost, but it's not a great talented team or anything like that. I mean, they have some good solid talent, but nothing like you're going, wow, that guy is—he's NBA bound without a doubt. Or you know, you get a couple of those guys that have that capability. And with his coaching ability and his preparation, it does kind of give you a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah, you look at the growth in a player like Mason Jones, but I really look at Adriel Bailey and the player he's become as really, I guess, for this season. I guess the best recruiting tool, if you will, in player development.
As far as development, from
where you started to where you're at now, I mean, I think Bailey's come the furthest from where you began. And I guess if you're at recruiting and trying to show a player, well, here's where we can take you from where you're at now to closer to your ceiling, Bailey's the best example of what they've shown as far as player developers.
No, you're exactly right, Tom. I mean, I think most fans kind of had written him off thinking that he would be a contributor, a solid contributor.
Mm-hmm. Role
and
player.
This year he is, he's been solid on both ends. And as a scorer, he's playing within himself, and that's something that you really didn't see the first few years. And he's maximizing his ability because athletically he's there, but his skill wise he's kind of limited. But you're exactly right.
Well, and it's funny too to me, Richard, that you know when we've gone through at Arkansas a few coaching changes, especially in the major sports over the past few years, and one of the things that always got thrown around with football, for instance, was with Chad Morris. Was that the guys that were already on the roster and that were Brett Bielema recruited players, they never felt that connection. They never felt that he bought into them, and so how could they buy into him? It just seemed like there was this disconnect there. But Eric Musselman seems to have done the complete opposite, where he didn't recruit any of these guys. I mean, these weren't players that he went out and he brought in, and they're his guys. He didn't. I know he got a few transfers, like a Jimmy Witt, which has been phenomenal, Connor Vanover, Gene Tolsil. I know there's been some guys added. But the majority of these guys getting the minutes aren't his players, yet they are completely and totally all in on Musselman. How difficult is that truly, and how impressive is it that Eric Musselman has come in and been able to get these guys that did not commit to play for him, playing for him at a very high level?
No, I mean, that's exactly right. And I think it's because if they see what he can do for them and what he's done for them and how he's improved them and how he is preparing them not only for – you know, what's going on right now, but beyond, you know, all these guys want to go to the NBA. They see that he brings in an NBA philosophy as far as detail and analytics and just everything is about preparation and scouting. And when you see a guy that has as much knowledge as is detailed, and you're thinking, hey, I'm a better player because of this, or I will become a better player, I think you do buy in.
You know, I think people look that don't know, they look at Musselman and they think he's about 45. They don't realize he's 55 and how much experience he has, you know, and how long he's been around and the number of years he's got. And all of that we're talking about comes from decades of experience. And I think it's all rooted in the fact that you got to show your players, and we're going to transition to football in this conversation, and Sam Pittman's about this too, and he's talked about this. You care about them. You love them. And then you can be tough on them, but until you've proven and shown them that, hey, I'm doing this because I love you and I care about you, they're never going to listen to the yelling and screaming and the being the tough part. And I think Musselman's established with this core group of guys, hey, I love you and I care about you, and that's why I'm being hard on you, and that's why it works. And I think that's Pittman's philosophy, and I think it's Musselman's philosophy.
Yeah, I've had conversations with several people and several college coaches. It's, you know, because you're starting to see this generation's different. They're just different, and they are raised differently. You know, 40, 50 years ago, you run through a brick wall for your coach without questions asked. Here you do have to, and I've always said it to people, you have to love them. You have to be able to pat them on the butt before you can chew them out and be hard on them. The kid's got to know that you care for them, you have the best interests at heart, and then they'll go to war for you. But if you're constantly, it's all negative, and you're jumping their butt all the time, and it's not constructive criticism, you're probably going to lose them, and we've seen that with a few coaches even recently.
Richard, let's switch gears a little bit and get to the football side of things, because Sam Pittman has completed his staff. You know what the assistant coaches are looking at. You know what their salaries are looking at. Just from the recruiting perspective, I think it's impressive off of resume, but from recruiting, how impressive is this staff that Sam Pittman has been able to put together?
Start off with the coordinators. I don't think anybody in the country can, you know, compare, you know, the hirings of coordinators like what Sam has done with Briles and Notum, a former head coach and a former highly successful, well, not former, but a highly successful offensive coordinator, really respected. you talk to parents and kids, you know, offensive kids, and they're very excited about Briles. And you talk to the defensive guys, and you realize that Barry Odom is highly respected. Then the rest of the position coaches, and then one guy that I've said this several times this week, I think one guy that maybe some fans are overlooking is Jimmy Smith, the running backs coach who came from Georgia State, who previously before that was Cedar Grove, Georgia high school coach, who won 2 state championships. And I wrote a story earlier this week, 3 high school coaches in the state of Georgia. I mean, he can go in. He's so highly respected as a coach and as a person. He can go into just about any school and have a chance at least of talking to that kid and getting some initial interest and maybe even getting a visit. Who knows? We'll see. But I think that Coach Smith's hiring is huge for the state of Georgia, recruiting in the state of Georgia. I had some dealings with him when Arkansas was recruiting some of his kids, and I was always really impressed in how accommodating he was. He's a people person, and that's what you got to be, especially in recruiting.
A couple of guys on the staff with some SEC experience. One of those was the D-line coach hire, and Derek LeBlanc, who joins the staff. Tell us what you know about this guy, because Arkansas obviously has had some good defensive linemen. They got to get deeper there, and they got to get a lot better there. This guy's got a reputation for being a good coach, developing some nasty players up front. Tell us more about Derek LeBlanc.
Well, he's a guy that has had some background in Texas, and I think that's going to help them recruiting wise, obviously. But he's a guy that does, Kentucky, until the last few years, their defensive front really wasn't that widely respected. But in talking to some people that played against them, they were always talking about how impressive that defensive front was. So I think he's a guy that is going to bring maybe some maybe a different mentality, and I think he's going to be able to recruit. Talking to a college coach that's known him, just raved about him as a person and a type guy that he could be for us in the recruiting area. But again, it's no surprising. Sam Pittman's going to hire. He's only going to hire guys that are similar to him, far as his philosophy, treating people right, treating kids right, and being good coaches, and that's no surprise.
So tell me this, Richard. It seems like every staff has to have an ace recruiter. Is there a guy that they have on staff right now that you look at and you're just like, oh, this guy's going to be bringing in some big-time players? Because I think that they all are capable of, and I know you mentioned the new running back coach and his connections with Georgia and in that state, but as far as going into Texas or going into Florida, just kind of like, what's the footprint going to be looking like for some of these guys, and who's the ace recruiter?
Well, I think it's going to be wait and see. Honestly, I mean, I you hear good things, and that's just the way it is with every new coach. You hear people are only going to say good things about people initially. They're not going to say anything negative, but and just hearing some of the words and how people describe some of these coaches and how they interact with kids. I mean, Brad Davis is one that I think has a chance, the offensive line coach, to be a very good recruiter. He did well at Missouri. He was kind of brought up through the coaching ranks by Sam Pittman. Sam Pittman gave him his first job. So I think he's one to keep an eye on. And I obviously Justin Stepp was a great decision to keep him on as a recruiter and as a receivers coach. But Sam Carter's another one I think that you keep an eye on too, just because he's young. He can relate to the kids, and from what I understand, he's really a go-getter. But I'm excited about all of them. I think that looking at their resumes and seeing some of their some of the things they've done in the past, that I think there's reason to be optimistic about the entire staff.
All right, let me ask you this, Richard, because I just want to confirm with you that, because people have been texting us and asking about it, the Georgia offensive lineman Cade Mays, he's going to Tennessee, right? There's no chance he comes to Arkansas.
Well, especially after what happened to his dad in Georgia.
Yeah.
He You know, I don't know, man. That seems pretty rough. But, no, it only seems natural because I think his dad played there, and I think he's got a brother there or about to have a brother there. So, you never know. You never know.
All right, so let me ask you this on top of that one. As far as the transfer portal goes, some guys that they're looking at, because we know what the recruiting side of things and some guys are offering and all that, but more than likely they're going to hit the transfer portal. Is there any person, any player, any quarterbacks that they're looking at right now?
Well, you know, I think people have noticed that Coach Pittman and Coach Browse followed the Wake Forest quarterback Newman. But there was a report saying that he's focused on five schools and Arkansas wasn't one of them. But I tend to think that, you know, we talked about Malik Thornsby, the four-star running back, high school running back coming in next week. I think Arkansas has a good chance of getting him, not next week, but the 24th. But I have no doubt that they're looking for a grad transfer quarterback. I mean, you got to have somebody that has some experience and I mean, they have a couple guys that have experience on campus right now, but a guy that has been successful and has the tools and to be a good leader and obviously do the things that's needed on the football field. But you need a little bit more experience, and I think that they're going to look hard in that grad transfer portal for a quarterback and a couple other positions too.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, it's amazing how that transfer portal has just changed college football in general. I mean, it's gotten to the point to now where, and I think it's a couple of things.
Grad transfer.
Right, because here you have, for a point in time, it was all about February where that signing day was it. It was everything. Well, then they had the early signing period get added into the mix, and then that's not as big of a deal. Still a big deal, but not as big of a deal. And now when you add in this transfer portal, it's almost like people are more interested and more focused on who's in the transfer portal than even recruiting in some way.
It's like a lifeline.
Yeah, essentially. It's like, well, we got an emergency here. Who can we go and get real quick that's already been playing? Richard, it really, truly has changed. I'm sure in your field, especially in covering recruiting, it's just another added element that you have to pay attention to.
Well, and the coaches, I mean, used to, you would sign your allotment in February, finish off your 25 or 20 or whatever scholarships, amount of scholarships you had, and or you might leave one or two open just for maybe a possible walk-on that you could put on a scholarship. Now you have to save some to see what's in the portal and see if there's some guys that can help you in certain areas that you're deficient. So, yeah, it's changed everything. I mean, your planning and the way that you finish out a class, you know, you might have taken, say, in the past, you might have taken a chance on a kid that you really weren't that high on, but you saw some potential, and you go ahead and sign him. Yeah, you may not sign that kid anymore right now because you're looking towards the portal.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always appreciate it, Richard. Have a great one, man, and we'll be catching up with you next week, all right?
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, appreciate it, man. I'm telling you, this recruiting and how everything is handled in the transfer portal, I wish that there was a way. We need to find a login for that. Like, how do we find out?
How do we get in so we can look at it?
Yeah.
And it probably wouldn't be as interesting as we like to think it is.
And, like, what does it look like? Is it something that's ran on, like, you know, old Microsoft DOS? Like, is it like old school? Does it have like a lot of, you know, really great production and imaging around it? I need to find out a way to get into this transfer portal. Maybe Sam Pittman will share his login with me or something. I'll ask him next time he comes on the show.
Recruiting Thursday brought to you in part by Academy Mortgage in Harrison, Mountain Home, and in Clinton, one of the top mortgage lenders in the United States, and they're right here in your own backyard. If you're looking for possibly 100% financing, rural development loans, VA loans, they do all kinds of lending when it comes to mortgage loans. Mortgage credit certificates available right now for first-time home buyers. You can receive up to a $2,000 tax credit, and down payment assistance is available as well. If you need a low down payment, they have a program for that. FHA, conventional loans. Matt Fowler and his crew know how to do all of these things. They underwrite, process, do the funding, and they can handle it locally right in their branch offices in Harrison, Mountain Home, and in Clinton, and get the closing done quickly. They deliver first choice customer service. It's all at Academy Mortgage. Call Matt today, 870-580-5210. That's 870-580-5210 for Matt Fowler with Academy Mortgage. Again, Harrison, Mountain Home, and in Clinton.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to get in that transfer portal, because it's fascinating to me. Like, you'll see a tweet from some sort of media member or whatnot, being like, so-and-so has officially entered into the transfer portal. It's like, well, did they have a login? Like, is it like a
how do they know?
Is it like your Netflix password where you share it with everybody that you want to do? Can you only allow, you know, six people to share it, something like that? I don't know, because I'd be interested to see, you know, what players put their names in that may not be announced, or that people may not see, or how it's done. Is there a process? Is an application? I don't know. But it has changed everything. And some ways for good, some ways for bad. But if you look at it from the Arkansas perspective, especially with Sam Pittman this year, I mean, this is the time where you may have to dive into that transfer portal and get all the help you can get. Not to say you don't recruit, because you got to do that. But Tommy, look at, what was it, three out of the four teams in this college football playoffs were transfer quarterbacks. And I know it's just about the quarterback, but if you look at a lot of these other players that are being able to contribute to other big-time teams, how many of them are transfers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, as much as you'd love to have the good old homegrown kid coming out of high school, staying with you and working on it for forever, that's not always going to be the case.
You think Joe Burrow's kind of a homegrown kid now in Louisiana?
Yeah. you think he's appreciated?
You think they love him as one of their own now?
Yeah. Do you think that Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield are loved over in Oklahoma for what they did? Yeah, I would say so. And it was going to be the same way when he had Justin Fields up there at Ohio State. Same thing. I mean, it's just, that's the way that football is today, college football especially, and especially with the quarterback position. I just hope Arkansas can take advantage of it at some point.
And with Kendall Briles, now the QB coach, coordinator at Arkansas, knowing the situation where there's going to be an emphasis on the front line, is this attractive to someone that would look to transfer in here and maybe even sit through the year to be in this situation? You know, if you're not a graduate transfer immediately eligible, it'd be nice to have someone that could come in and be immediately eligible and help you right away. But what top shelf guy would be willing to even come and sit a year?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't care where they come from. I don't care what they did. I don't care about any of that. I just care that if they come into this program, if they transfer in or whatnot, if they're good, let's go. I don't care how it happens.
Or let's just make KJ Jefferson really good.
Yeah. Or one of the two. Really good. I always want a competent quarterback behind center next year. Is that too much to ask? Probably so.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR.
I want to read this story to all of you, because Richard brought it up, and I meant to bring it up here in the final segment about this Georgia offensive lineman. So Kevin and Melinda Mays, who's the parents of Georgia offensive lineman Cade Mays, who's now transferring to Tennessee, they filed a lawsuit against the university last month after a portion of his father's right pinky was amputated by a folding chair while attending an event during the recruitment of his son. Now get this. According to the lawsuit, Kevin Mays and his wife and his sons, Caden Cooper, were invited to a dinner with other prospects. This was back in 2017. So you're talking about over 2 years ago. While attempting to stand up, Mays' finger was caught in the hinge of a folding chair.
Oh, my God.
As a result, plaintiff's Kevin Mays, has come from the quote of the lawyer, right pinky finger was partially amputated as the subject folding chair wedged against the column. It severed his finger, and it shot across the floor.
Oh, God.
Now, the lawsuit states that then Georgia offensive line coach Sam Pittman picked up the severed finger from the floor and put it on ice.
We got to get him on the phone right now to talk about this.
He was transported to Piedmont Hospital in Athens, where the finger could not be reattached. Mays continued to experience pain following the amputation, no kidding, with swelling, tenderness, and decreased mobility. He underwent a skin graft and surgery in the following years of the incident, and he states that he continues to suffer pain and decreased use of his right hand.
Ooh.
Now, have y'all ever thought about the fact that a folding chair could amputate one of your appendages? if that's the right term.
I can top that story if you want. And it's a factual story. And I don't have to go there. But if you want me to go there, I can top that story. Not with me personally, but one of my closest friends in the world.
Can you tell me what part of the body is
finger?
Okay, then yes. I couldn't handle any other.
Ski rope. Great friend of mine.
Mm-mm.
He'd already lost one hand. He's a trim carpenter. Lost a finger years ago. Got another finger. Caught ski rope.
Nope.
Lake Washtenaw. Boom. Cut it off popped it off at the knuckle. He's out in the middle of the lake. Fortunately, it didn't fall in the lake. Caught it. Caught his finger. You know what you got to do?
Ice and go straight to the hospital.
Got to keep it moist. Well, you're in the middle of a lake. You don't have any way to keep it on ice. He's on a jet ski. On a jet ski with a tow rope or the ski rope, popped it off. What do you do then, John?
You put it in the water?
No, that's contaminated.
Well, I don't know. Tell me. Put it in your mouth?
Mm.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
So he put his finger in his mouth?
Only choice.
Was it the top knuckle or the bottom knuckle?
The middle knuckle. Right there above where your ring's at, you know?
So you're not talking about just the tip.
No,
it was the...
No, sir. The ring finger.
Did he get his finger back on?
No, sir.
Oh. So he put it in his mouth for no reason.
Yes, sir. Mm. So, I mean, I think that's worse than that. But can you imagine the pain of... I mean, either one would hurt, but... Of a folding chair?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Well, here's the real question. Would any of y'all...
What kind of chairs are they using down there?
Would you or Maddie T, would either one of you, after seeing a finger fly across the floor, do what Sam Pittman did and go over and pick it up?
Depends on how good that recruit was.
What about you, Maddie? Would you do it?
Yes, he thought he was a pretty good player.
Maddie, would you do it as well?
No, I'd probably try to make, you know, add a little comic relief, you know, act like I'm picking my nose with it or something, you know, or like I'm picking my teeth, like, hey, start pointing at people with it, you know,
and then hey, finger phones, everybody,
you know, add a little, you know, levity to the situation. You know?
Yeah, that would probably be, you know, I'm trying to think, because I'm like, what, there's a movie about this, like, there's been a movie scene I'm thinking of.
He's giving me the finger.
And I'm sure no one would laugh, at least at the top, but. Like, was there a movie that happened or somebody?
There has to be.
If
you're going to get something amputated, go to a professional and do it. Don't out a chair.
Yeah, don't seek out a metal folding chair.
That just hurts.
That makes me queasy.
Exactly.
But why is he suing Georgia for that?
Was their chair. Who else are you going to sue? Yeah. You got to sue somebody.
You don't have to sue anybody. This is like one of those things where it's like you hear these accidents happening and people's. It's like, you know, it goes back to the whole famous one of like. When the lady spilled the hot coffee from McDonald's on her and she sued and won. I'm like, it's hot coffee. Now, I know that, you know, you can sue anybody, but it's like, how did you in a folding chair amputate your own finger?
Here's the thing.
To me, that makes you look stupid.
He cuts his finger off in the chair and his son still plays there, right? Still goes there?
He has, yes. This was in 2017 when this happened.
That's the most amazing thing to me.
His son still ended up going
I would
there.
Think that would pretty much end the deal on the recruiting trip. Well, I'm Sam Pittman at that time in the offensive line. Well, we can take him off the list, you know.
I've actually come around on the whole hot coffee thing because the truth of it was at a boiling temperature, and they used to make it that way. You know, it would be too hot to drink when you got it, and so I actually came around on the other
thing.
And so now it's like it's standard. They can't have it that hot anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Does it need to be that hot?
You're right.
Yeah, which... Okay.
I mean, that could have been, I could have spilt on a kid or anybody.
But, how many times do we hear of stupid people doing stupid things and, suing people and winning?
Oh, all the time. We live in a very litigious society, John. You've heard me say it many, many times.
Litigious? Yeah, I've heard you use that word.
I've got a t-shirt that says that.
Litigious.
This is a litigious society. Get used to it.
I'm going to have to use that in a sentence later today. I mean, it's never ceases to amaze me how, first off, something like this happens. And now I'm never going, I have like this irrational fear of folding chairs now.
Sue the chair.
Yeah, like sue the chair company.
Right.
That made it. That's who needs to be held responsible.
Sue them all.
Yeah. Sue everybody.
Yeah, just sue anybody who had any sort of, you can sue the people who were putting on that recruiting party.
You think we could get Sam Pittman to talk about this?
I don't see why not. I mean, he picked up a finger. He picked up a finger.
I want to know more about that.
Like, I couldn't do it. If I saw a finger just come sliding right in front of me, I wouldn't touch that thing.
You couldn't deal with a deer. How could you deal with a finger?
Exactly.
Like when the deer was shot, you said you were on the corner puking, you know, over the side of it. Can you imagine what would happen if you saw a finger?
Yeah. Splattered on her purse.
Okay. Well, would you pick up the finger, Tommy?
I don't think I would.
Okay. Yeah. So don't be giving me crap for it.
I'd play like hacky sack with it, be kicking it around.
Like in this scene from Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom in the very beginning when he's trying to get that antidote. And it just gets kicked around and everyone's like, oh, geez. And ice gets poured over and you can't find it anywhere. That's what it ended up being. But what a story. What a story to that.
Mm.
And I can't believe that I didn't hear about this story when it happened. This happened over two years ago.
That should have made national news.
You know, and here's the thing, too, that I don't know about old Father Arcade. It was your pinky finger, okay? It wasn't like it was your index finger or your thumb.
Yeah, who even needs a pinky?
Yeah, your pinky, as far as the power rankings of fingers.
It's the bottom, number five.
You know? Yeah, right. It is number five because you got to have your ring finger, you know, to have rings. You got to have your middle finger
to tell people how you feel in traffic.
To express yourself.
Yeah. When somebody cuts you off in traffic.
You got to have your pointer finger because, I mean, this is what you do for everything, how you push buttons. Yeah. And, of course, we all know about the thumb and how important it is. So, yeah, if you had had your thumb or your index finger cut, maybe I'd get into that. But I can't get on board with any of this. So, we have a few. Again, when these stories come, we get text messages from all over the place. John in Nashville says, local guy to me lost a thumb in a roping accident, got caught between the rope and a satty horn while hooked to a steer. I don't know if I wanted to start a whole thing where we start telling stories of people losing their fingers.
I didn't get that like grossed out this morning.
Yeah, I didn't need to go through that. But, when we have Sam Pittman on, I got to ask him about this story. Or maybe somebody will already. Like maybe he needs to put out a statement on Twitter and saying, this is what happened. And also, I want to know, when he did pick up the finger, did he grab a napkin?
Just bare hands?
Or did he bare hand that sucker? I mean, what's happening there? I mean, that's really the question that I want to have answered, is how did Sam Pittman handle it? But what a fascinating story. And the fact that he's transferring out, now we know why. Because his dad got his pinky finger cut in a folding chair. Unbelievable.
I'm still amazed he ever went there to begin with. That just seems like a deal, you know, that would kill the deal right there.
Mm-hmm. Nah, he's fine. He wants to be at a school where not only can it be able to develop him into a great football player, possibly the NFL, a great man, but he also wants to go to a school that cuts off his dad's pinky.
But Brian in Portsmouth points out, you don't even need a pinky to play video games.
The most important stuff there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The power rankings of fingers, pinky's definitely on the bottom of the list. So I think it's stupid that he's suing Georgia.
Get over it.
Yeah, seriously. Listen, don't be an idiot and cut your pinky off in a folding chair. Like, that's the thing I can't understand. Like, I folding chairs can sometimes be complicated. Yeah. But how? How do you cut your finger off in your own folding chair?
They can be a little complicated, you know, the whole opening and closing thing.
Yeah, the opening and closing thing. I mean, you know, where do you put your hands?
Yeah.
Where do you put your fingers? And, you know, maybe that's what this is really the whole lesson. Mr. Mays, you need to learn where to put your hands when you're folding the folding chairs. It's about hand placement. That's the biggest difference. See, he could have all avoided this if he just learned hand placement.
You talk about a phobia for the rest of your life.
I'm never sitting in a folding chair again.
Maybe never sit again.
Yeah, I mean, weird. And the fact that it was Sam Pittman's the guy that picked it up. It could have been any other, like, strength and conditioning coach. It had to be Sam Pittman, which probably tells me that everyone else scattered. And he saw that and was like, I guess I better pick this one up.
We're getting that kid.
I know. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to make sure that we're getting that kid. It's all about recruiting. I would love it if Sam Pittman said the reason he did it is because of recruiting. That would be a phenomenal end to the story. Well, appreciate everybody that's been listening in to the Morning Rush today. For Tommy Kraft and Matty T, I am John Neighbors. Same sports show, same sports channel tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody. We will see you then.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.